Hello, friend. Welcome. This episode is about a move to a new shop location and the discovery that the average repair order was lower and shrinking. My guest noticed a rash of what he called $0 tickets.
We started noticing this problem. So we're thinking to ourselves, what are we doing wrong? We have to be doing something wrong.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, welcome. Carm Capriotto here, the Automotive Aftermarket Podcast guy. Hey, I so appreciate your support and your listenership. If you like what you hear, please share this with a friend that you know will benefit from these audio workshops. We've got over 740 in the catalog right now. Now, I bet you have a friend in the business. Please pass the podcast forward so that we can lift all ships. Thanks for sharing this. Hey, don't forget, we produce three different aftermarket shows each and every week. It totals up to four, and you'll need to subscribe to each of them just once. And yes, they are free to subscribe and listen. Remarkable Results Radio, Town Hall Academy, and For the Record. Now go to a special page on my website, remarkableresults.biz/listen, to get the links to your favorite app for your phone. Hey, here at Remarkable Results Radio, we are proud to partner with Napa Auto Care in the upcoming 2020 Napa Expo. Join Napa, your peers, and me in Las Vegas, April 6th through 9th, 2020, and be part of one of the largest auto care industry events. While there, discover the latest innovations and trends that you don't want to miss. Contact your Napa store to learn more. Hey, I'm with Tom Palermo, a world-class master technician and the GM of the family business, Preferred Automotive Specialists in Philadelphia, PA. In this enlightening interview, Tom takes us through his discovery and process to find out why his average repair order was shrinking ever since he moved to a new location. He explains his research as he was looking for the root cause. Tom shares what he uncovered and how it just stood out. And it was so evident that he named it $0 customers. Get the talking points on this episode with Tom Palermo and copy and paste them for your next meeting agenda. Go to remarkableresults.biz/E511. Hey, you know that my love of audio and my passion to change the lives of others is what drives every podcast we curate for you. We are always deepening the connection with our audience to help you make a difference in your business and your life. A warm welcome to Tom Palermo from Preferred Automotive Specialists in Philadelphia. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Carm. How are you?
Glad to have you here, Tom. You and I did a very interesting Carmcast that we turned into a podcast called What We Will Do More Of in 2020. And we put it out as a podcast, episode 493. And it just so happened that you started to talk about this thing that you were researching and doing called the $0 customer. And that's what we're here to talk about. And it was something that you and your dad coined.
We moved probably 2 miles in a straight line from where we had been for about 20 years. Moved to a new location. It was a much larger location. So we had a shop we were doing truck work out of, and we had a shop that we were doing light duty in. Now, we moved 2 miles in a straight line, and we were able to keep pretty much all of our customers. It wasn't, you know, there was no real pushback on that, which it took us a long time to find this place because we didn't want to lose what we had previously had. But I might as well have moved to Mars, because the whole way that the private customer base moves and operates in 2 miles away is 180 degrees from what we were used to.
Let's tell the audience that you're a big fleet specialist. So the fleet would move, but what you're saying is that the local close tight market changed.
Correct. So our fleet customers, you know, we do pickup and delivery and all that. Where we were, as long as we were in a general area of where we had been, was not an issue. It was, you know, the private work that mattered. Anybody that lives in a metropolitan area understands there's certain boundaries, you know, usually large, you know, roads or, you know, expressways or something like that, that kind of divide up market areas for shops. We didn't really cross don't ask me how we did it, but we actually were able to move into Philly and not cross one of those imaginary boundaries where people felt uncomfortable, you know, crossing to get to you. Pickup and delivery obviously helps. So when we got here, we wanted to keep our current customer base as well. And the business that we moved into, or the building we moved into, had a very small business that was, it was failing. This place was probably a month or two away from completely shutting down. But they did have a, you know, they did have a following. It wasn't, you know, that much, but it was a following, and we wanted to maintain that. So what we did was we took our customers, our private customers, and the private customer from the database that we had had got when we moved in here, and we defined specific areas that we wanted to market to, how many cars they had, how much they had spent previously, things like that. And we very, very, very specifically targeted those customers to attract them to come in and come to the new building and see what we had done, because we'd completely rehabilitated this place, you know, and get comfortable coming back. So we did that. Resounding success. Marketing went great. You know, there's just the improvements we made in the building drew people in. You know, if you ever really want to get new customers to come into your building, paint it. People would just show up. What was funny was there was a few shops around us that were smaller shops, and they, you know, kind of needed, you know, the outsides were a little beat up. Once we got done with the outside of our shop, they all painted their shops. It's kind of funny. And they, in turn, got busier. I drive by them every day. So, you know, it's kind of a, you know, you always say the rising tide lifts all ships. Well, there you go. So we did this. The marketing was successful. And then we started, you know, attracting new customers. Well, we started noticing in the first quarter, we had people that were coming in, and we have a very, very set process when people come in. They're greeted a certain way. We perform, you know, we perform our maintenance checks a certain way. We have digital vehicle inspection. We have a lot of communication with the customer. We give them every opportunity. Try to have every opportunity we can to interact with them about their vehicle and educate them. And, you know, if it needs work, obviously, you know, perform the service. So we started noticing that we had a lot of very low dollar bills, and we had, or zero. So, you know, $0 bills. Now, where the $0 bills came from were things like, hey, you know, my car's making this noise when I go over bumps. Can you check it out? Yeah, sure. The paperwork gets processed. Our technicians would get in the car, go on a road test, bring it in. Oh, you need a control arm. Oh, you know, your brakes are this. Well, okay. Well, you know, I'll do it later. You know, generally speaking, the strategy is if somebody comes in without a major diagnostic issue, you're not always going to charge them to, you know, to check their brakes or check, you know, check the front end or something like, you know, something simple, something that's not that hard.
When you were in the other place, what was the close percent of someone coming in and you checked out their car? Was it higher than now?
Oh, yeah. I would say the volume of private customer here is higher, or at this point, but we'll go, you know, back to first quarter. The volume was higher for sure. The car count was higher, but the close percentage was dropping. Our close percentage, you know, over in where we were, you know, 2 miles away in a straight line, was high. And that was mostly because we were, I could give you a number, but I'll be honest with you, I don't remember it off the top of my head. I have to dig through some paperwork. But I would dare say that it was in the 85 to 90% range. There's a very good reason for that. The reason for that is we had a very, very, very loyal private customer base. We did a lot of fleet stuff. Okay. The way we usually picked up private customers and either replaced the ones that were there through attrition or, you know, new customers was usually word of mouth referral, which was very successful. It was very, very successful. I mean, we grew and grew, you know, I mean, we did good with it, but we also do a lot of fleet work. So we were happy.
They're married somehow.
Yeah. Now here, a little bit different story. So we get these people coming in, you know, you want to try, especially when you're new in a new building, you know, you're trying to offer things that will entice people to come in. I'm not a big give stuff away for free kind of guy, because I think if you do that in the wrong way, you can attract people that you don't want to have, you know, customers that you don't want, that are looking to do what these people are basically doing. We started noticing this problem. So we're thinking to ourselves, what are we doing wrong? We have to be doing something wrong. We're used to one thing, and now we're working with a little bit different kind of a, you know, different kind of a setup here. So we review our processes. We talk to some customers. We talk to customers that didn't want to get work done. And, you know, sure, there were times where we might have made a mistake and we didn't communicate as good as we possibly could have. But for the most part, our people were on point. We've had the same people for a very long period of time. So we all work together very well. And we all kind of know what each other's going to do. So we start investigating this, and here's what we found. Do you remember before where if you went to, there's a lot of wonderful shop management schools out there. I won't name any names, but I'm sure everybody knows who I'm talking. One of the first things they'll tell you is if somebody picks up the phone and calls you and says, hey, you know, how much for a catalytic converter on my whatever? The idea is to get the person through the door. Okay. Right. You don't want to be giving prices out over the phone from a myriad of reasons, but you know, you want to get them in the building because the odds of you selling a job once they're in the building is obviously higher than over the phone. Well, I think that a lot of people are following that strategy now. Shops, a lot of shops are doing that. So the new strategy, at least where we are, and I don't know if other people are seeing this, is I won't call and ask for a price. I'll bring the car in. If it's a check engine light or something like that, they won't do that. But there's another side to that, which I'll get to in a second. And I'm sure this is happening to a lot of your top tier shops. What they'll do is they'll bring the car and say, my car makes a noise when it goes over bumps. Now, most shops probably won't charge them to throw a guy in the car, you know, take it out on a road test, go over a couple bumps, bring it in, shake it down, say, oh, there's your noise. Well, what they do is they'll do one of two things. That particular individual will either come in, get an estimate from you for, you know, for the repair, and then take it and compare it to one he or she has already received from somebody else, or go somewhere and say, hey, they want to charge me this, you know, what can you do? Or what we found, and this is probably happening to a lot of your top tier shops more than they know, is there are people out there, there are shops who will send people to other shops to have their cars diagnosed, to then bring the car back to them to be repaired. And we caught more than a few times where this was happening, particularly with check engine light, computer diagnostic kind of stuff. They were coming in and they were paying a diagnostic charge. And they would leave. And the next day, I would see the car in another shop somewhere sitting there being worked on. So we found from one particular customer that there was a shop that was saying, I don't know how to fix this. I don't have the tool to fix this. Go over to them and tell them to diagnose it. They're going to charge you to diagnose it and then bring the car back to me. And, you know, tell me what they say and I'll fix it. So they were co-opting our expertise, my people's expertise, our time, our productivity. And listen, we charge for diagnostics, but we don't just want to sell the diagnostics. We'd like to do the repair as well. You know, I mean, this is, you know, that's the whole name of the game. And there are a lot of times where you can do diagnostics on a car and you spend a lot longer on the car diagnosing it than what you're charging just by the nature of, you know, what's wrong with the vehicles. So we started to see these kinds of trends. We also saw people that would come in, have us look at the car, leave, come back, fix the car, either themselves by ordering parts online or something like that, come back, you know, later with another problem, you know, and you'd see the work had been done and you'd say, hey, what happened? Oh, I did that in my driveway, you know, 2 weeks ago, but now I got this, you know, that kind of stuff. So what we did was when we started seeing these, and listen, the majority of our customers were getting work done. I don't want this to sound like we had some kind of a massive, you know, massive problem. It was a few a week. What you and people in this industry that come from the side that you're coming out of, what you guys do for us and other shops is just invaluable. So you have had podcasts that I've watched, listened to, that were related to, you know, key performance indicators and things like that. Well, the way we found this was our average RO was dropping minimally, okay, but it was dropping. And what we were able to do, because we monitor all these different, you know, we separate out our private and fleet work. We separate those two average ROs out because usually an average RO on a fleet is going to be more than a private customer for obvious reasons. You know, we were able to separate that out and then drill down and really understand at least what was happening from the sense that we knew we had a specific group of customers that were behaving in a certain manner. It was our job to then try to figure out what they were doing and why they were doing it and whether it was something we were doing wrong or whether it was just a marketplace issue or something like that. So we uncovered a whole bunch of things.
Hey, it's Carm, and I'm back to talk Napa Auto Care and Auto Tech Training. Now, as a repair shop owner, you know technical training is essential in the ever-changing world of automotive technology. Or as one auto care owner put it, train or you'll phase yourself right out of business. Thanks to Napa Auto Tech, technicians can keep their skills sharp and their Napa know-how up to date by attending hands-on classroom-style training for almost every vehicle make and model. You can choose from classes in diagnostics, heating and cooling, electrical electronics, brake systems, ignition and fuel systems, plus a whole lot more. Napa Auto Tech is the highest quality training the industry has to offer, and it's presented by experienced instructors who are ASE Master Certified Technicians. Now, some have owned their own shops, and they all have a detailed automotive background. The trainers consistently receive excellent ratings from the technicians who attend. Even after the class is over, techs can access course information online with ClassPass. So when questions come up later, they can use ClassPass to get the answers 24/7 from any computer with an internet connection. Now, what's more, Napa Auto Tech has been accredited by ASE's Continuing Automotive Service Education Program, reviewed against industry standards, and approved by peers. Don't just take my word for it. Auto Care Center owners who have taken advantage of Auto Tech training say that well-trained technicians are helping to increase their shop's repair capability and raise bay productivity. Now, that results in fewer comebacks, more satisfied shop customers, and reduced technician turnover. It's hard to beat that. Your servicing Napa store can tell you even more about the benefits of Auto Tech training, plus the many other reasons to become part of the Napa family with over 17,000 Napa Auto Care Centers from coast to coast, making it the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country. So it was very obvious, Tom, to see the $0 tickets. They had to stick right out. I mean, to me, immediately, that was your ARO issue.
Yeah. So, and here's the thing. Like I said, it wasn't a massive amount every week. It was a few here, a few there.
It is an excellent name for this. Doesn't matter if it's $20 or if it's zero or if it's 100, it's still something to reckon with.
We had a situation where we wanted to capture as much business as we possibly could, obviously. But we also, in keeping with your, you know, some of the podcasts you've had, remember the podcast you did with Joe Hansen and, I can't remember who else was on it now. I don't remember who was the, when is it time to fire a customer?
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I listened to that again before we're having this conversation about a week ago, just because I said, you know, this fits right in, because what this drove us to do is to be able to try to identify by behavior what the customer really wants when they come in, and to understand when we have a situation where somebody's trying to do something that's a little, you know, off to the side. We found, like I said, a few different angles on this thing, and it's probably happening to a lot of your shops, especially if they're not totally familiar with their demographic, like we weren't when we came here. We spent a good amount of time identifying it, and I'll be honest with you, one of the things that helped us most identify, because we broke it out into, is it new customers? Is how many times have the people been here? How many times have they been here and not, you know, we've gotten service done? How many times? We really, really broke it down. And what we found was, through our CRM partner, we were able to identify that a fair number of people that searched us out on Google and called us and then came in were actually doing this whole, you know, come in, get you to look at the car, and then, you know, not get the work done kind of deal for different reasons. Take it, you know, they may have taken the car and they may be able to work on the vehicle themselves, but they couldn't diagnose it, so they fixed it themselves, or they took it to another shop, or, you know, they, you know, another shop sent them here to have the car diagnosed. So it's, you know, we found a lot of different components to this, more than we ever expected. You know, your knee jerk reaction is just, oh, they're just, you know, they don't want to get the work done, and that's it, and, you know, forget them, and, you know, move on. It's more important to take that information and digest it and adjust your marketing and adjust how you're handling the customer and how you're pricing things.
Tom, is it easy to identify a $0 customer when they walk in the door?
If you get in the car and you look on the front seat and there's a bunch of parts on the front seat, this is somebody who's been going around the block looking to get something done. I won't name any names. You know, if you get somebody who comes in and really is kind of indifferent about the way they're dealing with your people, you know, like you're just another, like it's just another place to go. You know, well, you know, when a customer comes in and they have an issue, you know when they have an issue. You know, you can tell by the body language and the words they're using and the way they approach your people you know, it's not like they're going to, you know, they're going through the McDonald's drive-thru. They have a problem with their car. This is generally a serious issue.
So if you're people on the counter and they're seasoned, you said that to me, but they could identify a potential $0 customer. Do they go into a, you know, a different funnel, if you will, in how to handle them?
Generally, yes. This whole thing kind of forced us to change the way we charge for services. We perform from a, I don't want to say a diagnostic perspective because we always charge for computer diagnostics, but, you know, we'll, you know, if we have to do anything that requires our people to spend time, a good amount of time, we're going to try to get some, you know, some value for that. Now, what we have tried, what we did try, and what does seem to work is, if you, and this is a big no-no, I know, but it was a, it had, did solve the problem a lot for us. If you get the work done, I will discount that off your bill. So if you charge somebody, you know, $50 or, you know, $49.95 to do a, you know, a maintenance check, and it, the vehicle needs work, and they decide, and they get the work done, or what, you know, whatever. I'm using that as an example, but you get the picture of what we're talking about here. And that is a no-no. And that is something we never did before. That is something we never did before, but I'll tell you what it did.
But you tried it, and you could start it and stop it, but you had to figure out if in the marketplace that you're in, if you could move the $0 customers up by a different strategy.
And it worked. And I will say that the number of $0 customers we had dropped off dramatically, and people actually ended up getting the service done, because I think human nature is, hey, look, if you can get something for nothing, get it. But if you can show them, and we were talking about this before we started, if you can show them the value and you can make them understand why, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch for, you know, not to use an old beaten up, you know, saying, but you'll find that most of the time, most of the customers you want are going to react positively to that, because they can apply it to something in what they do for a living that generates income for them, to make them understand, hey, you know what, this guy's right. If I worked, you know, if you worked for another, you know, I don't know, if they were salespeople, you know, they would understand that there's a value to what they do. So, you know, that has to be there. There's a monetary component to that that's involved. One other thing is, for the shop guys that are going to listen to this, forget about the $0. $0 is bad enough. You know where the killer is? Productivity. Because all those customers that you have that are waiting and good paying customers are now taking a back seat to somebody who will not be a good customer for you, which is therefore you're basically punishing your existing customers that might be in the shop that day.
My big question to you was going to be finding keepers. Okay, the customer that wants to come in and live and support and trust your value proposition. So you've got a strategy to take the $0 customers. It's really interesting. But when you look back, say in the last quarter, as you worked this new strategy, would you say that what percentage of those were, you know, value looking customers, keepers?
I don't have an exact percentage, but we've cut the $0 invoices down by, oh gosh, 60 to 70%. I mean, it's huge. It's huge. And if you're a forward-facing public business, you're going to have, this is going to happen. Anybody that tells you it's not going to happen is not telling you the truth. You're going to have people that come in, decline work, and not get stuff done. Or you're going to have people that you want to try to attract and maybe give them a, you know, give them an incentive to become a good customer. Of course, we've all done that. I'm not talking about those customers. They don't fit into the $0 customer, you know, even though their bill may be a zero, they're not fitting into that. You know, that's different. We drastically reduced it. And as a way to kind of show that that's actually working, the productivity in the shop did pop up a good amount. Enough to make a difference, enough to for us to see that, yeah, these people that are coming in that are looking to for you to kind of co-op your expertise and your people, your equipment and all that, you know, they can have a huge effect on your productivity if you're not careful.
Let me ask you a question. I'm not even sure I should even ask this, but let me ask this. Someone comes in, you feel that they may be a $0 customer. They're asking you to drive the car to see what's wrong with their front end. And instead of finding room and putting them ahead of someone else because they showed up, would you say, hey, if you can come in the morning at 8:30, we'd be more than happy to look at it?
That is also a strategy that is helpful. If you see that person again, and generally we'll tell them, you need to leave the car. Come in the next day, leave the car. Things like that are going to stop the person who's just going from shop to shop to shop to shop looking for a price.
They may make them stickier.
Exactly. And you know, the interesting thing is I don't want to paint them in the light of being bad. It's not that. They're reacting to whatever the situation is in their lives. They're reacting to, you know, the nature of the automotive repair industry in our particular area. Okay, this may not be an issue for somebody in, you know, Colorado, okay, or Nebraska, but it's an issue. It's probably an issue for most people in metropolitan areas because you have a lot of, you know, look, there's a lot of competition around us. We have shops everywhere. So, you know, people are going to, you know, we've been dealing with this for years. People will say, oh, I can get it cheaper down the street. Well, you might be able to get it cheaper down the street, but, you know, here's why you want to do it here.
Do you mean there's enough automotive repair shops like there are Dunkin' Donuts on every corner?
Where I am, yes. Where I am, there are a lot of auto repair shops. Obviously, we try to do the best and be the best we could possibly be. And our customers, in my opinion, are the best customers anybody could ever have because the customers that stay with us, I saw a gentleman last week that came in. He's been a customer of ours for 35 years, you know, since my dad, you know, it's almost since my dad started this. And I have a lot of customers that are 20, 15, you know, I mean, you know, that there's, I have a lot of customers that are in that area and their kids come here and their friends come here, you know, so it's a, you know, we have a really good customer base. You, of course, you know, through attrition, you want to try to attract new customers. This little exercise that we did in identifying and really drilling down, I don't want to bore you with the specifics, but the really drilling down into who did what, how many times did that $0 customer come in? Why are they a $0? Are they a $0 customer because they have a new car and they're just getting oil changes done for now? Now, of course, they're not going to. All right, I'm counting low price invoices. Is there?
Was it $100 or less that you'd look at?
We looked at $100 or less.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. We looked at $100 or less because we felt like if we saw somebody who was consistently below $100 over the course of, say, a year, like we did, there would have to be a good reason for that. The good reason might be, hey, it's a new car, you know, and they're just coming in for oil changes. Or it could be this person came in and, you know, had their car, got an alignment check done and spent, you know, $70 or, you know, $60, $80, whatever, you know, or, you know, and then came back again. We recommended a bunch of work and then he came back again 3 months later. All the work had been done and, you know, he had some other problem, you know. So that was our cutoff to really get an idea. We had people that had new cars that just came in for a bunch of tire repairs and oil changes, you know. You know, that kind of stuff is going to happen. And those customers are customers that are obviously loyal. They just have a new car. You know, they don't need work yet.
Enlightening, Tom. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing this. I think you really sparked not only my interest, but I trust me, the people in the industry. And what you did is everyone that I know who's listening is in your shoes or been in your shoes. You basically said, hey, look, you know, we were feeling this and you did something about it. Great, great, great. I appreciate it. And Tom and I are going to, you know, actually, we're going to be on a great panel at the Napa Expo together.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, thank you. We're going to talk about transparent pricing. Apparently, that's becoming a hot topic. People are signing up for that.
That'll be a fun one.
And thanks so much, Tom, again, for being here. In that episode that we were talking about firing customers, Jerry Kazaya, Joe Hansen, and Doug Callahan were on. It was the Town Hall Academy 126. Thanks for bringing that up.
Great episode.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.